This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up, the story of Kate Moore, 19th century keeper of Bridgeport's Fairweather Lighthouse. Bridgeport City historian Mary Witkowski and Coast Guard Ensign Martin Betts will tell us about her heroic and inspiring devotion to Long Island Sound's busy seaway. But first, the Sea, the folk pop duo of Chuck Costa and Mira Stanley. We featured them before in the program, but that was before their brand new album came out. It's called Love We Are We Love. They're back today in our Studio 3 as part of a new series featuring local artists and musicians. The Sea performed this song, a palindrome on Where We Live, before, but we wanted to hear it one more time.
Love, we are young, too old, too soon, too old, too young. Are we love? We are young, too old, too soon, too old, too young. Are we young? We are young, too old, too soon, too old, too young. Are we young? We are young, too old, too young, too old, too young. Are we young? Are we love? Are we love? Are we?
That's the band The Sea, live here on Where We Live. Their debut album is called Love We Are We Love, and that's the title track. It was released in late February of this year. On our website, WNPR.org, you can find some information about some upcoming shows, including one that's happening in New Haven on May the 2nd. I'm thrilled to welcome back to the studio Chuck Costa and Mira Stanley. Welcome back, guys. Thank you so much for coming in once again.
Thank you so much for having us.
I'm really glad to hear you here once again. I'm really pleased to hear that song one more time. You played that song for us once before, and it's a beautiful song. And it's clearly a difficult song to follow with the words going round in circles. Has that changed a lot over time as you've taken it out on the road and you play a song like that? Do you feel it changing a lot?
It's definitely gotten more intuitive, and just we can. I think in the beginning when we played it, it took a little. It took some practice and some, you know, thinking about it when we were doing it, which can take you as a musician, you know, out of the song a little bit sometimes. And now we've kind of gotten it to a point where it's just become you can just, you know, hit go, and it becomes more fun. And I think it
feels more like a dance at that point.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know that you guys have been playing together for quite a while, but you just got off a long stretch on the road that included the Northeast and the Southeast all the way out to the Midwest. What do you learn about yourselves as singers as you spend so much time together, especially in this duo context, just the two of you playing music together, listening to harmonies? How do things evolve over a long trip on the road?
You know, I think you learn every time we come back from a long tour, sort of a long stretch on the road. Right now, I think we're sort of decompressing and processing everything that we just learned. But we, you know, you learn more just about yourself as a singer. Every time, the more that we sing together, I think we sort of hear each other's parts differently. And it's sort of like if you were drawing a picture or something, and you sort of filled or drew just sort of these general lines, and then the more you looked at it, you started to see all of the details and sort of the nuances of what you're creating. I think you get that more sort of the more time you spend.
And we play at this point in our careers, we're playing sort of the gamut of venues. They range from real small clubs to some, you know, when we're doing opening, you know, we're a new project, so we're still doing a lot of like opening sets for bigger acts and bigger venues, and so we it's really the spectrum of, you know, quality of sound or just sort of what the variables that we have to deal with as far as how much we can hear each other, how all that stuff, and so after a few months of that, you just get better at listening for each other, and more of it becomes more of a dance of sort of, it becomes more intuitive, and even in situations that we found that in the worst sound situations, we can still do it pretty well because it becomes muscle memory almost.
And you hear yourself differently. We've been, you know, especially in the bigger venues, we've been playing some bigger spaces, and, you know, that's a completely different thing than sort of playing, you know, an unplugged thing or even anything that is just smaller. You're not hearing yourself coming through such big speakers, and you're not hearing all of those details and nuances necessarily too in the same way. So it has a different energy.
Well, what about the audiences? As you take music like yours, this music that can be very quiet, and it really does rely on the interplay of two voices, you take it out to an audience that sometimes knows your music, sometimes doesn't know your music, all the way out to the Midwest. Tell me about how the audience reacts in different ways. Maybe some stories from the road about audience reactions, especially in places where your music isn't as well known.
Well, I was just thinking, the furthest west we went was Iowa, in this little town called Fairfield, which this is one end of the spectrum of how people react to the music. And Fairfield is known, it's the Transcendental Meditation Center of the
country,
in the U.S.
Maybe,
really?
The Maharishi, like, in the 60s or the 70s, I don't know much about it, but established a school, and now it's, you know, it's been there for a long time, and there are a lot of meditators there. And there's like a vibe there that you wouldn't expect to find in Iowa necessarily, and people kind of on this sort of transcendental place. And so the people that come to the show, we played there a couple of times now, and they are so open and ready to hear music that, you know, in our music, you know, we put a lot of effort into the lyrics, and that's a big part of what we do. And they're just, you know, you can feel it from the first note. They are wide open and ready to receive it. Like, you know, whereas there are other places we play, especially ones, you know, where people aren't familiar with our music, where it takes a few songs maybe to open people up and to get them to sort of understand what it is that we're doing and what they're hearing. And but we love that because we love all of it because we do approach our songs and our music as a conversation. That's the whole point for us, is to be communicating stuff. And so, you know, same as having a conversation with a person that you just met, it can be awkward in the beginning. It can be hard to get going sometimes, and other times it's easy right away. And we enjoy that.
And that's one of the things that we learn too. You know, I think we always go into any situation sort of planning what we're going to do in a way like, how can we sort of engage people from the first note? What's going to make it easy for the audience to find where we are, and the easiest for us to sort of get in the place that we need to be as performers to have that conversation?
I think everyone would, all sort of folk acts would probably want to have the transcendental meditation folks just sort of sitting there ready to vibe on whatever's going on. That actually sounds like a really nice audience.
They're so amazing.
That's pretty great.
As opposed to the beer bottle crowd, you know. Well,
yes.
We're talking with the band The Sea, The Sea. They've been on our program before, but they've got a new record out, a relatively new recording that was just released. In February, we're going to be hearing some of the songs from that record. Chuck Costa and Mira Stanley are here with us. Let's listen to our next song here. And the song is called Fistful of Flowers. What can you tell us about this song before we hear it?
Well, this song, it's about sort of being just good with wherever you are in your life. All the good stuff, all the bad stuff, just trusting that you're exactly where you're supposed to be. It's sort of a celebration of being in the moment. And also, you know, it talks sort of about spending time with someone also. So if you're choosing to spend your life with somebody, it's sort of a celebration of that also.
Is this aspirational, or do you feel like you're in this space now for yourself?
I definitely feel like I'm in this space. It was actually one of the first songs that I wrote after it's just a couple of years ago when I decided to quit my job and start playing music. It was one of the first songs that sort of came to me, and I think it was very much representative of how I was feeling at the time, and I think that feeling has just grown since then.
You've got a heart worth more than its weight in gold, and the mind to stay true to a gypsy soul. Hands that I cannot belong. You think that I'll still be beautiful when I'm old. I've been wading through waves where the crickets sing. When the sky is so dark I can see everything. Maybe we're all spinning around a black hole, but I think that you'll still be beautiful. Love me not. Love we've got hours and hours and fistful of flowers. Once we planted a garden, but it didn't grow. Not what we wanted, 'cause the seeds had blown. Over the fence into the field, oh, do you think it'll still be beautiful when we're old? Love me not, love we've got hours and hours and fistful of.
This song is called Fistful of Flowers, and the band is The Sea, The Sea. They're returning to our air to talk about a brand new record that they have out called Love, We Are, We Love. It was released in February, and there's more information on our website, WNPR.org, if you want to find out about upcoming concerts they have, including one happening May 2nd in New Haven. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about this debut record, hear more songs from The Sea, The Sea, here on Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankowski. Today we're listening to some music by the band The Sea, The Sea. They're just off a tour all over the East Coast and out to the Midwest. They've got a brand new record out as well called Love, We Are, We Love. We heard the title track before, and we're going to also be telling you a bit more about some upcoming shows they have. You can go to WNPR.org if you want to find out more. You can also visit them online at thesea.com. Before we hear the next song, also from this record, maybe you can tell us about the song we're going to hear, Chuck.
Absolutely. It's the first song on the record. The title is Re-Blah, as in regarding blah. It's the subject of an email. And it was an email that my younger sister at the time, 16, I guess, and was having a rough couple months, as teenagers do. Really nothing major in terms of life, but in terms of a teenager's life, it was, you know, she wrote me this email. You know, she kept putting all her faith in people that she trusted, and they kept letting her down and over again, and just, you know, as her big brother, please tell me this is all worth it, and like, what is the point of all this, and so that kind of a thing. And I wrote her a long email back, best I could, you know, telling her I didn't know what the point was, but I did know that wasn't as important as it's worth it. And anyway, I summed it up in this tune, so this is Re-Blah.
There's no such thing as having too much faith. There is only losing faith. And why, oh why would you go to that place where you have lost your faith? And you say sometimes you have too much faith in people. They have a way of letting you down. I say don't be quick to judge those people, 'cause that kind of thing is a way of coming back around. Sometimes it's all out of focus, and all of this chaos is bringing you down. I say, just let it go and love somebody, 'cause that kind of thing is a way of coming back around. Yeah, that kind of thing is a way of coming back around. There's no such thing as having too much faith. There is only losing faith. And why, oh why would you go to that place where you have lost your faith? Where you have lost your faith.
That's the Sea to Sea here on Where We Live. It's a beautiful song.
Thank you.
It really is. It's interesting, too, hearing the story about it, that it's correspondence back to your little sister. It feels like the sort of thing that you can and should write to someone you love. Mm-hmm. Not always easy for us ourselves to do the thing that you're talking about there, right? It's like it's kind of like the thing you need to hear from someone, but a lot of times we don't take our own best advice. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. It's amazing. When I did that, it was the first time I'd written a song from sort of a letter that I'd written to somebody and an email, and I thought, God, I should do this more often. It was kind of because it's sort of, it becomes, you know, you kind of talk yourself through something when you're, even if you're talking to somebody else, but when you're, you know, and it's just an act we don't do all that often. You kind of keep it inside and maybe have a conversation about it. Lots of times, though, I think we just think about it and it just stays there and doesn't, you know,
go anywhere
from there. And
well,
I think
it's almost like you're making a case and you got to work it out through the process of writing a letter. And I think it can make for a great song because it's something that you really truly feel and believe, but it's a different process than just sort of, I don't know, saying it to yourself.
Yeah, and I thought it, and when I had worked it through, just sort of when she wrote that to me, I was like, God, how do I explain that? You know, I was like, she's you know, young enough that it's going to be very difficult for me to communicate this. And I thought, you know, the simplest thing that popped in my head was, you know, I was thinking how faith is sort of like an all or nothing proposition. You can't have, you know, too much of it or too little of it. You either have it or you don't. And the idea that the faith that she was thinking was just sort of having faith in people. And the idea was like, you know, it just seemed like a simple kernel of truth that, like, well, you know, if you just kind of keep good people around you and, you know, the best you can. And
you treat people the best way that you can.
Yeah, and just be honest and all that stuff just seemed to be summed up in this idea. You can't really have too much faith if you just kind of, because if you lose faith in the world, you know, it's a pretty dark place to be in, and I think we all have it there, you know. But
I also, I like the idea of faith as kind of a binary, sort of an on-off. It's not something that I think a lot of songs are and a lot of poetry about is, if only we had more faith. But I like the construct that you have.
Well, the whole, and the reason why this song is a good kind of lead into the record is the whole song, the whole record has this thread through it of leaps of faith. And to us, that's like jumping into the unknown, whether it's like a new job or a new relationship or, you know, big things, small things.
Moving somewhere.
And so it's something that you have to sometimes jump off a cliff when you're in those situations to do the right thing or do the thing that feels you can't have it both ways. And that's, you know, the biggest decisions in your life, if you look back, you know, the things that really shape your life, they're always those decisions, the ones that you kind of have to go all in or you can't really half either way. And so there's this thread. All the songs on the record take place just before, during, or after a leap of that sort. So
yeah, tell me more, Mira, about how these songs fit together, because I think it's really important when you say this is a collection of things we want to put out as a record and we want to share them with people as one whole. There is a thread that goes through these things.
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily a thread that we were completely aware of when we were putting it together, though we were definitely actively sort of searching for a group of songs that sort of could share some sort of a narrative. And I think it was reflective of sort of, you know, where we were. I think the fact that we were writing songs that sort of share this idea was reflecting sort of where Chuck and I were both in our own lives and sort of, you know, the process of just coming together as the Sea of the Sea and deciding to sort of go out into the world and make music. Like, that was a big leap of faith, and I think it was something that we both really had to sort of tackle head on and take that leap and try to deal with everything that comes along with that honestly. And so I think that sort of opened up a lot of thoughts about those things. You know, I think most of these songs, they're, you know, like Chuck mentioned, before, in the middle of, or sort of after a leap of faith. And the biggest thing is sort of trying to look at those things honestly and, you know, how you're feeling, how that affects the people around you, how you know, what you learn about yourself and your relationships and the world just through the act of sort of putting yourself out there.
But I think it's so interesting, too, and I maybe when I've spoke with you in the past talked about this, but we have a lot of groups that come in here that tend to play acoustic music and sometimes not. But there is a difference when you decide to put yourself out there and say, we're going to be a musical group, and just the two of us are going to blend our voices, and we're going to sing these songs that are about these important turning points in our lives. That's a lot more vulnerable than going on as a four-piece rock band and just like mustering through playing louder the night that you don't have it or when you're not getting along. You really are putting yourselves out there in a much different way, sort of a naked, really difficult way in front of people you don't know.
Yeah, I think that's true. And
I think it's the same back to that sort of idea of how our music tests, you know, it's like a conversation, is that we find ourselves in the same way with people we just meet and we're talking to. We have a tendency to get deep real quick. I don't know why. I don't know why. And all of a sudden we're telling people real personal stuff and they're telling us really personal stuff. And I think the same thing happens with our music. It's just sort of, that's just like who we are. And I think
we try to find, you know, sort of the lighter side of those things too, and let those things still be a celebration and have fun, find a good balance.
I think we enjoy there is a scare, that vulnerability, and I mean, we just, that's the place that I feel like that's where we learn that, you know, everybody just kind of, you learn more when you're open to the world, and that's sort of, it can be really scary at times and all that, but
generally
it ends up, it's amazing. Most of the time you land on your feet. Most, you know, people are good and you know, they treat you good generally.
And when you put those good, or when you put those most vulnerable things out there, we tend to, you know, you tend to get really good things back. You know, people share stories I think that's when you can most honestly make those deepest points of connection. And we think that that's a big thing with, you know, with live music. And, you know, that's an argument for, like, getting out and being in the world. And, you know, there aren't a lot of places in the world still where you can gather with a group of people and sort of experience something that's happening right there, the sort of, like, ephemeral thing that will never happen again, and you're in a room together and you're sharing that and you're hopefully having some sort of a conversation or dialogue around that.
And it's also an argument against one of the things that I think plagues music today is irony, is something that we are all awash in, it seems. And when you say we're going to go out there and we're going to start from a very real place and we're going to put some big emotions out there right away, it's amazing how, you know, people just ready to listen and ready to interact. It's an amazing thing. So it's nice to not have the irony watch. It's nice to have some real honest conversation and to hear these honest songs. We're going to hear one more song. Why don't you tell us about it before we hear it? It's a song called 10,000 Birds.
It's a great segue from that point.
Yeah, it's 10,000 Birds. It's the last song on the album, and it started as a poem. But it's a song just about... It's inspired by a murmuration of birds. So if you don't know what that is, it's like the dance that birds do when they're migrating, and you sort of see one move and then you see the rest of them follow. And we think it's this really great metaphor for the way we're sort of all in the world together, and how all the actions that you act on, you know, all the littlest things, the biggest things can have really far-reaching reverberations in the world. And so we really like to think of it as a song about being good to each other and sort of, you know, counteracting all of the chaos and everything else in the world. You know, sometimes it's really overwhelming when you see all of these things that are going on on a global scale, and you sort of feel helpless a little bit. And so we like to think that, you know, just doing something good for somebody else, the smallest thing, opening the door for somebody, that's all a path to some sort of bigger sort of goodness.
Well, I wish you all the success in the world, and I can't wait to see you again as we open up to more bigger, gooder things for you guys. I want to thank Mira Stanley and Chuck Hosta once again. The Sea, their new record is Love, We Are, We Love, and we've got more information about their upcoming shows at WNPR.org. Great to see you guys.
Thank you.
Gentle thunder, 10,000 birds in the front yard all together, all at once, taking wing to lift the silence that got one move, 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 the other. It was the
watches blur. You, me, mother, father, friend, lover, stranger, foe, that I won't move. The other, it was the sight.
And the number to call to make that pledge is 1-800-584-2788. You can always go online to WNPR.org and click on the Donate Now button and make your pledge there. We also have a lot of thank you gifts that are on there. I'm Patrick Scahill. I'm here with Gene Amatruda and Lee Newton asking for your pledge of support. Lee, how are you doing this morning?
I'm great. And I hope that you will go to the phone right now at 1-800-584-2788 and pledge for Where We Live.
Yeah.
Great program. Love these haunting harmonies. The music is beautiful from the Sea to Sea. And I hope that you will support it right now with a gift. And go to WNPR.org. You'll see all the thank you gifts that we have available.
Chuck Costa and Mira Stanley in the Sea to Sea, as John was saying, you can learn more about them on our website at WNPR.org. There's a video that we have up there. And Chuck was a former state troubadour for Connecticut, which is an interesting title and it's a position that a lot of folks have held. Chuck did a great job with it and had been on our station a few times, and we're delighted to welcome him back here. If you value this type of storytelling, I mean, John's show, he covers so much in a given week. Next week on Monday, he's going to be talking with Governor Malloy. Today, he's doing this great show on music. Coming up, we're going to hear a great segment on some local history here in Connecticut. If you value that, there's a price that's attached to it. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes production that goes on, a lot of studying that John's doing when he's not on the air to get ready for the show. And it takes time and it takes money, and we're fortunate enough to be able to do it because you pick up the phone and call and support it. The number, it's 1-800-584-2788.
And, you know, Patrick, we have a $1,000 goal.
Yes.
For this program, and we are working our way toward our last day of this.
Yep.
Drive. $35,000 is what we need to make today in order to be where we need to be, to continue to bring you Where mm-hmm. We Live and all the programs that you love to listen to here on WNPR. You can be a part of it, and this is the best day, maybe, of the whole drive to join, because the Newman's Own Foundation is matching dollar for dollar every single donation that comes in. So it's a fantastic way to really double the money that you are putting into the programming, make it go that much further. 1-800-584-2788 is the number to call. Consider the Mother's Day flowers. We've been talking about this for the last couple of weeks. And this is your last chance to take advantage of it. For a gift of $120 or $10 a month as an ongoing monthly donor, you can send 24 long-stem assorted roses in a vase to whoever you choose, your mother, your grandmother, maybe a motherly figure in your life. It will be sent anywhere in the continental U.S. on Thursday, May 8th, which is a few days before Mother's Day. It's kind of nice to get them early. She can enjoy them all weekend long and know that, you know, not have that kind of anxiety. Will my son come through for me? Will my daughter do it this year? You can take care of it. If you want it delivered on Friday, jump up a little bit to $11 a month or $132. But beautiful way to take care of your donation and something nice for your mom as well. 1-800-584-2788.
We've already had over 170 individuals call up this morning and during Where We Live and pledge their support. I'd like to say thanks to an anonymous donor who called in from Bloomfield. We had another person join us from Middletown, West Hartford, Manchester, Cromwell, another person from Cromwell. New Canaan has called in, Southbury, let's see, there's even more here. I should just scroll down. There are so many.
Yeah.
Cheshire, Berlin, Norwich. Folks from all around the state are getting on board, and they're doing that because they know that they won't continue to hear this type of programming unless they come and make a pledge here. So the number, it's 1-800-584-2788. You can always go online to WNPR.org. When you do that, one of the most popular thank you items that we've had during this campaign is the First Book Program. And the way this works is you pledge $6 a month or a one-time gift of $72. And we're going to donate three books to First Book. So First Book, they're a nonprofit, not-for-profit organization. They've been around for about 25 years, and they've served over 2 million children. You're going to pledge $72 or $6 a month, as I said. Three books are going to go to children in need. So it's a great way to support WNPR and create a wide community of readers at the same time. That's something that's been really popular during this campaign, Lee.
It is. And one of the books that are being donated is our own Jeff Cohen's first children's book. So it's very nice all around, a nice thing to do. A lot of people are taking advantage of it. But really, you know, we're offering you suggested levels. Certainly you can go to WNPR.org, check out the entire list of thank you gifts. But really what we'd like you to do is consider what the show is, you know, how it is important in your life. I mean, today we had a great group, the See the Sea, performing. And this is really how you find out about music. You find out about it on WNPR. You find the groups, the musical acts that you want to listen to, the books you want to read, the places you want to go. We are a gateway to your world, to Connecticut and beyond. And I hope you recognize that by joining us right now at 1-800-584-2788. We are working our way toward that $1,000 goal for Where We Live. A great morning already for Morning Edition. Can we keep up the momentum right now? And you can double your contribution thanks to Newman's Own Foundation. So it's a wonderful way to take advantage of it. The number to call, 1-800-584-2788, or go to WNPR.org. And thanks.
This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up on Monday's show, a visit from Governor Daniel Malloy. It'll be his first time on our program since announcing his run for re-election this year. He'll join us along with the new DEEP Commissioner, Rob Klee. He'll tell us about the first few months on the job for him. You, as always, will have a chance to ask questions of Governor Malloy on the phone or with your emails and tweets. I hope you can join us on Monday here on Where We Live. Now, early in our show, we heard from a band with a seafaring name, The Sea. It got us thinking about the water and a Connecticut story of a woman who kept Bridgeport's Fairweather Lighthouse from 1824 to 1878. Her name was Kathleen Moore. That name is now being given to a brand new Coast Guard cutter. We'll find out more about that in a moment. Her story is one that fascinates our next guest, Mary Witkowski, who's the Bridgeport City Historian and Department Head of the Bridgeport History Center. Mary joins us by phone. Mary, welcome back to Where We Live. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing quite well. So tell us, who was Kate Moore?
Kate Moore was an incredible woman who lived in the 19th century and actually was, I would say, a hero to women today. She was already in the 1870s. She was well underway with helping her her father keep the light at the lighthouse, which was not an easy task back then.
Well, we're going to talk about the work of keeping the light on at the lighthouse. If you have stories to share about the Fairweather Lighthouse in Bridgeport, 860-275-7266, or if you have questions about Kathleen Moore, who, from what I understand from you, Mary, it went by Catherine Moore, Kathleen Moore, Kate Moore, different spellings of her name?
Jesus, I think she was hiding her identity. By today's standards, you know, everybody wants to be in the media, but finding things about her and links to the past, it's really hard to find. And she's Catherine with a C in the census. She's Kate Moore, most commonly.
Well, of course, her full name, Kathleen, being given to this new Coast Guard cutter we'll be talking about in just a moment. Tell us about this lighthouse, though. Back in the 1800s, when we were a more seafaring nation, that's how we got about even more than we do today. How important was this lighthouse to Bridgeport Harbor?
It was tremendously important. In fact, they said that there could be as much as 300 ships in the harbor at a time, and she was actually helping her father originally. At the age of 12, she was already helping him keep the light. going, which was not easy because it was an oil lantern and there were many steps up to the lighthouse, and it's very treacherous.
It's a very treacherous job. I mean, it seems physically taxing, too. And starting at the age of 12 and then throughout most of her life, she does this in a lot of cases by herself. What did she have to go through to make sure this light was always on so the ships weren't crashing into the rocks?
I just try to imagine it myself, and it is very difficult to even think about. And she did it alone most often. So her mother was her mother and father lived to a ripe old age, as we found out that Kathleen did. She lived to be 85 years old. She died in 1899, but she really was a treacherous job. I don't know how she did it.
And you can read more in Connecticut Explored at ConnecticutExplored.org. Mary Witkowski wrote a piece about Kate Moore. I want to bring in Ensign Martin Betts from the U.S. Coast Guard Sector Long Island Sound, based in New Haven, Connecticut, to talk a little bit about some of the history of women keeping lights. Ensign, welcome to our program. So Kate wasn't the only famous woman who made sure that the lights were running along the Sound.
No, she wasn't, John. And in fact, the Coast Guard has a long history of women in our service, particularly in the keeping of lighthouses. I found over 175 women listed as lighthouse keepers in our Coast Guard history. Well, and of those, seven right along the Connecticut coast here.
And as we were saying before, this is a treacherous job. It's a very, very important job. Just maybe you can explain a little bit more thoroughly, too, why this job was so important. I mean, we take things for granted today. We've got electronic beacons on everything so planes don't crash and boats don't run into anything. This was a much different situation back in the day.
It was, and in the days before electronic and GPS navigation ruled the day, mariners had to rely on line of sight, particularly in the shore areas, in the shallower areas of waterways coming into port, and the lights served as beacons to help orient mariners coming into port, especially during times of low visibility. And before those beacons were automated, naturally they had to be tended by people who kept the flames burning.
Hmm. From what I understand, she was credited with saving a number of lives. Mary Witkowski, 21 lives she saved over her career?
Right. And I actually think that was more than that. I think, you know, she was being very honest about her work. And so that is what they say now, that's how many she did.
But when you say saving lives, what was she doing? Pulling people out of boats?
Yes, she was. In fact, She recounts about one time when two men were clinging to a capsized boat, and she managed to get them in her house, and one of them died during the night, but she saved the other one. And that was a very treacherous time, as I said.
My goodness. And we were talking about the story of this very famous woman, Kate Moore, Kathleen Moore, who kept the Fairweather Lighthouse in Bridgeport Harbor for many, many years during the 1800s. Ensign Martin Betts, so she is being honored with the name on a new Coast Guard boat. Tell us a bit more about this.
Well, the new Coast Guard cutter is to be commissioned on May 10th in a commissioning ceremony down in our home port in Key West, Florida. And the tradition of naming vessels after people who are important in the service, the idea is that they reflect the values of our organization, and they serve as a longstanding examples of values that we can work toward. And certainly Miss Moore captures that spirit. The new cutter is one of the fast response cutters built in Bollinger Shipyards down in Louisiana. She's a 154-foot Sentinel-class fast response cutter.
And when you say a fast response cutter, what will this ship be doing? What will be put in service doing for you?
It's going to be accomplishing maritime missions in District 7, which is down in Florida. So it'll be operating in the Caribbean, primarily doing drug and migrant interdiction, as well as our other law enforcement missions and search and rescue.
You know, Mary Witkowski, this story is so remarkable. In 70 years, she tended this lighthouse. It's such a very important job. It's grueling work, mostly by herself. Do you think that over the years she's been given her due? I mean, we have so many Connecticut heroes that we talk about, some men and some women, but we don't hear very much about poor Kate.
I never heard anything. Kathleen Moore was, she was unheard of, I think. And she really, I can just imagine her as they're talking about the Coast Guard cutter, if it was here today, she would be like standing at the front of it, and she would just be like holding on like in the Titanic, like, oh my gosh, this is beautiful, you know? It would have been something.
It would have been something. Hey, can you tell us what the status of the Fairweather Lighthouse in Bridgeport Harbor is now? She kept this light going for so many years. What's the lighthouse up to right now?
The lighthouse is being kept by the people of Black Rock, and they are doing a very good job of keeping up with it, but it really does need some help. You know, I was looking at it the other day, and it looks like it may be a little bit leaning.
a little bit leaning.
So we have to check on that, yeah.
Well, that's not a good thing. I'm sure that if Catherine Moore was around today, she would make sure that the lighthouse was in very good shape for the years to come. I want to thank Mary Witkowski, Bridgeport City historian, for sharing this story. You can read more in Connecticut Explored if you go to ConnecticutExplored.org. Thank you so much for your time. And thanks to Ensign Martin Betts from the U.S. Coast Guard Sector, Long Island Sound. Our program is produced by Lydia Brown and Tucker Ives. The executive producer is Katie Tolarski. I'm John Dankosky. Governor Malloy's Monday, and this is Where We Live.
Another fascinating show brought to you by Where We Live on WNPR. My name is Lee Newton. I am joined by Patrick Scahill, and we hope that you will go to the phone right now on the very last day of this important membership drive and support Where We Live. We've had a great morning, but we are working our way toward a very ambitious day, $35,000 for the entire day. If we can raise that, we know we'll be where we need to be to continue to bring you great programming like this. You can join us at 1-800-584-2788. Make a donation. Of course, you can go to WNPR.org as well. But another fascinating story of Catherine Moore, a lighthouse keeper in Bridgeport. This is a story I had never heard, Patrick.
Yeah, me
so,
neither.
You know, John is always unearthing, of course, and his producing crew. Really amazing stories, looking at exciting topics and things to learn about. Some are more serious, some are lighter, but Where We Live is consistently a fantastic show, and I hope you'll support it right now. 1-800-584-2788.
So we do have a goal for this hour of $1,000, and we have about $436 left to go to get to that goal. So we're making some great progress, and the nice thing is right now when you call in, the Newman's Own Foundation is going to match your donation dollar for dollar. So a lot of folks do wait for two things. One, these matching challenges, and two, for the last day of the drive. Both of those conditions are true right now. So if you are one of those folks, call up and make a donation. If you have already, thank you so much. If you haven't yet, now's kind of almost your last chance. The number is 1-800-584-2788, Lee.
And you know, Patrick, we got a pledge in from Sammy Shama of Hartford, and says that they'd like to donate some children's books. I listen only to this station, and I believe it's our duty as the public to support them. So I think that's wonderful sentiment. I hope that you will join us right now, as so many people have done. Diane in Simsbury. We had Patricia in Old Saybrook. Helder called. And just lots of wonderful people have called in and made that contribution and supported WNPR, and especially Where We Live. This is a program that began 8 years ago. It was something that we wanted to do for so long, and now we just can't imagine this WNPR without it. And I hope you'll support it right now by going to the phone, 1-800-584-2788.
Very quickly, I'll mention just one more time, for a gift of $6 a month or a one-time pledge of $72, you can donate 3 books to First Book. This is a not-for-profit group that's been putting books in the hands of kids who need them for about 25 years. So again, that's for a pledge of $6 a month or a one-time gift of $72. You'll put 3 books in the hands of a needy child, and you'll support WNPR. Call us right now. We do have this $1,000 goal. We're below $400 to go to get there. Help us finish this out. It's 1-800-584-2788, or go online to WNPR.org. And thank you so much in advance for doing that.